First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All righty, we are back on a Thursday afternoon. As we roll on halfway home, First Name Sports. June the 29th. I don't know that anybody celebrates half birthdays, but it's mine today. December 29th is my full birthday, so I'm 6 months.
Don't really like half birthday.
I'm just saying. I just realized that. I'll give myself a half pat on the back. That's a thing.
So 27.5?
28 and a half.
28.5.
Yeah. Gotcha. I'm not yet at the age where I want to be considered younger. When does that age start? You know, when do you start like wishing?
It's already started for me at 30.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm getting close. You know, it is funny that I thought about that last night. I was talking with one of my friends who is a hockey fan as well, and he's asking me about the Flyers taking Matvey Mishkov, who I mentioned is the Russian guy who has a contractual agreement to play in Russia for 3 years. And he goes, at the end of our phone call last night, he goes, well, you'll be 31 when Mishkov plays for the Flyers. And I was like, damn.
Oh, my goodness.
You're right. That's weird. Anyway, some more news out on the gambling suspensions front in the National Football League. As a trio of Colts have been suspended indefinitely, Isaiah Rodgers, Rashad Berry, and Demetrius Taylor, Rodgers and Berry both getting cut from the Indianapolis Colts. And Titans tackle Nicholas Petit-Ferrari has been suspended 6 games. Now, a lot to sift through here. The first of which that I have is, and I don't think we have an answer to this, but why did Rodgers and Berry get cut but Taylor didn't? Because it's the same team. And the indefinite term was applied to all three players for the Colts. But I think Demetrius Taylor is still a member of the Colts. So that was something that kind of perked my interest a bit. Taylor's a free agent. So I guess he was already let go. So I had a feeling that that was not right, but the other two were cut by the Colts. So that takes care of that. But Taylor, not with an NFL team right now, had been with the Lions. But perhaps the way it was worded tripped me up. And the Petit-Ferrari guy for the Titans gets 6 games. So there's a story on ESPN.com that dives into some more of the details that we know. We talked about the 6 kind of rules of thumb gambling principles that players needed to abide by in order to not get suspended. We did that yesterday. But I'm going to read an excerpt from this story that I think when you hear this, you'll kind of chuckle over the fact that this Isaiah Rodgers' career is now in jeopardy because of it. Anyway, it says, a source told ESPN that friends of Rodgers who were in Florida encouraged, and I believe Florida is illegal state for gambling, encouraged him to place many of the wagers, the majority of which were in the $25 to $50 range. Legal sports betting was not available in Florida this past season. Excuse me. So, perhaps he was doing this for friends. The largest wager placed on the account was a $1,000 prop bet on the over-under on rushing yards by a Colts running back, which won. Now, Belmer eventually told me that it was betting on the over. So, he's betting on his own teammate to do well. And this was the kind of stuff that we talked about as impossible to regulate, but the kind of betting that we should all be okay with. Like, if I'm a wide receiver and want to go out and bet on my over yards, well, I have to get over that number. I can't fudge it and just phone it in and go under. That would be the problem. But if you go over, you have to earn your over. So Rodgers is betting on a running back to go over $1,000 there. And, it sounds like if I am to read the tea leaves here. He's got friends in Florida who he's putting bets in for. So maybe they're not even his bets, and they're $25 to $50. So this is where, you know, and Belmer and I went back and forth a little bit about this yesterday. Well, they should be easy rules to follow, so you should just do it. But I'm still questioning the reasoning behind the rule, because if he is placing bets for friends because they are not in legalized states, then, and it's only $25 to $50, then what are we even doing here, NFL? Like, why are we so hell-bent on potentially ruining careers here because somebody's putting a bet down for a friend? It doesn't really add up for me there. And even the $1,000 prop bet, again, was going over, so he's betting on his own teammate doing well. So, on one hand, I understand the perhaps overmanaging, micromanaging that you want to say the NFL is doing here. Now, as it pertains to Nicholas Petit-Ferrari, who got suspended 6 games for going to meet, and by the way, he got 6 games. He went to meetings from the NFL advising everybody on the gambling policies and still violated one of the rules by betting on an NBA game at a team facility. So I think this is one of those where I can look at both the NFL and the player and say, you're all idiots. Because the player goes to these meetings, and unless we talked about it, maybe he just wasn't paying attention on his phone, just there because he wanted to be there and say that he went. Maybe he thought that if I go, then people won't be checking my accounts as much because they know that I'm there. And so it'll be easier for me to do it. Regardless, Tennessee is a legal state. So the NFL is trying to have a one-size-fits-all gambling policy, but there is no one-size-fits-all gambling policy for everybody in America, just regular people. So that's where I kind of look at it and say, NFL, like, it's pretty obvious that this stuff's going to happen, particularly in legal states, when I'm sure these guys who are around friends that like sports are spending their free time, and one of their friends, if they're living in a legal state, opens up DraftKings or whatever and goes on and puts a bet. Like, it's just commonplace that that's going to happen. And it wasn't an NFL-related bet. Like, that's the thing that really tripped me up on the Petit-Ferrari thing. Yeah, he's stupid for going to the meetings and then still getting caught. But at the same time, if you're at the facility, I don't care if you, like, why is being at the facility such a big deal if it's not an NFL bet? Because you have no, like, at that point, then he's just one of us. He's got no impact at all. I mean, maybe he's got inside information, but I highly doubt it. And here's the other thing that's kind of scary for a lot of these guys. I mentioned the free agent, Demetrius Taylor. He's 24, only appeared in one game for the Lions last year. Petit-Ferrari, 23, got drafted last year in 2022, so he's only played one season in the NFL. How about Rashad Berry, one of the Colts, who got signed to the active roster for Indianapolis last January off of Jacksonville's practice squad? And, you know, if you're familiar with how that works, if you're spending an entire career or multiple seasons in this case, because Berry was 26 on a practice squad, you're just praying to get elevated to somebody's active roster, because then you start collecting those game checks and your monetary compensation for playing football goes way up. And now, I'm sure because this last one, Isaiah Rodgers, he did start 9 games, so he's got a little more financial wherewithal under his belt by now, but he's still just 25 and got cut. So the common thread here is a 23, a 24, a 25, and a 26-year-old. All guys that are not yet at that point where they're financially secure by playing football, or, you know, relative to other football players, their earnings don't compare. And now their futures are in doubt. Now, you can blame them and say, well, hey, if you're not dotting your I's and crossing your T's while you're still trying to prove yourself in the NFL, then that's on you. But the other thing I thought of is, like, what would we have said if – what would have happened if Pat Mahomes got caught doing this? Like, you know, because Calvin Ridley was a pretty big-time player. Got – eventually the Falcons moved on, and he got suspended for a year. So that's kind of the thing that I'm waiting for next. I don't doubt that this will happen. If we see these many players doing it, why couldn't a bigger name player get caught doing it? And again, Ridley, I think you can say there's already evidence of that happening. I also wonder if the NFL maybe bends the rules a little bit. Like, would they actually drop the hammer on Pat Mahomes?
Or would they cover it up?
Yeah.
Pull a Rob Manfred.
Hey, if we're allowed to sit here, and you did it more than I did, and talk about, well, you know, the Spurs, you know, they've been good all these years, and for a couple of years ago, like they told Pop, hey, we're going to give you Wembanyama if you just suck for a few years, you know, just make it look like you've been bad long enough to where it's natural, and then we'll give you Wembanyama. Then I'm allowed to say maybe Pat Mahomes or Joe Burrow or somebody else got caught with this, and they covered it up.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, actually. Right.
We'll take a time out. We'll come back. In light of this, I came up with five things that you've bumped into in your daily life, whether it be on the roads or in school or, you know, an obligation to society that we all have to serve, where I've questioned why it is we do that, because we've done a lot of time questioning why these gambling rules are what they are. So I'll get into some of the questions about life next.
This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, we are back on a Thursday afternoon. And I think this is a fun little thing that we're going to dovetail off of the NFL gambling policy stuff with these suspensions. The big thing that both myself and producer John Bellmer were talking about that we just don't fully understand is the reasoning behind these rules for the NFL. Like, as I mentioned, why are you suspended if you bet at the team facility if it's not the NFL? And as we also said, why are you suspended if you bet on an over prop of a teammate or even yourself? Because you're ultimately betting on yourself to hit your number. You know, I'm sure. Because let's be honest, how many of these guys do you think see their number in Vegas and be like, Vegas ain't got nothing on me. I'm going over. I'm sure that's happened. Now, maybe they don't actually bet on it, but it's such a part of our society that it's only human for these players to see these numbers and have some kind of reaction one way or another. Now, again, we can debate if we think that reaction should go as far as I want to bet on it myself, but the whole point is we don't understand why the NFL has such stringent, you know, or strict policies on gambling when we don't seem to know, or if there are strict policies, nobody's been caught violating them because we haven't heard about a lot of suspensions. I think Evander Kane in the NHL got a gambling suspension, but it's a lot more rare in hockey, basketball, and baseball. We don't see it as much. So perhaps that leads me to the first thing in terms of our daily lives as citizens, in terms of things that have just had you say why. And the first thing is gambling. Why now are we living in a country where some states it's totally fine and others you can't do it? I mean, to give you an idea of the kind of absurdity, I think, of that, I have a buddy that lives in New York. New York City, and he's a high school friend. And what he would do, and I guarantee you there's others that do this, on an NFL Sunday, say at like 10 a.m. Eastern, like 3 hours before the games or whatever, he would get on a train, Jersey Transit train, which goes across state lines and goes into New Jersey, and the last stop is New York Penn Station right at underneath Madison Square Garden, get on that train and go back into New Jersey, and he'd have his location device settings turned on his betting apps, and New Jersey was a legal state, New York was not,
put all his bets in for NFL Sunday, get right back on the train and go back to New York and watch the games. I guarantee you a lot of people do that. So it feels like something like, I don't understand how that, without getting too political here, I don't get how that is something that, oh, well, it's like some states are fine with it, others aren't. It doesn't seem to be like a partisan issue. Like, it's not, I don't feel like it's something where like Republicans are like, no, you can never do that. And Democrats are like, yes, all the sports betting in the world. Like, it just doesn't seem like one of the, I don't know. I don't pay enough.
Yeah, but you're around a lot of people who enjoy it. I think there are parts of this country where there's large groups of people who
still
are against it. Yeah.
But I bet you some of those people that are against sports betting will go to a casino and play craps or play blackjack. Like,
maybe.
That's what I mean. Like,
maybe.
What are we all doing the same but thing? It's like, different ways of doing it.
It's like marijuana, right? Some states are legal, some states are not. I think the general consensus is it's, you know, it should be legalized, but it depends on what that area wants. And if that area votes against not having the gambling, there's really not much you can do. There's enough people there that don't want it. They think it
you're right. I guess that I still question it.
Yeah, I do too.
Next one, right turn on red at a traffic light. Why is it that some lights you can do it and others you get a ticket for it because there's a sign that says no turn on red? I suppose the answer there is the intersection has been vetted enough by the local, you know, government to say, like, at the local level, like, this is not a safe intersection to make a right turn on red. But I've been at plenty of intersections, and maybe you're just there at the right time, where there's a sign that's no turn on red, and it's crickets, because nobody's there. And I'm just, and I'll be honest, I've gone ahead and made the right turn on red.
I think most people do, right?
Right.
I've gotten a ticket for that.
You have?
At a light here in Houston where I didn't, in Texas, in the state of Texas, turning right on a red is completely legal. Some states it's not. But there are.
Statewide, there's no turn on red.
In Texas, it's completely legal to turn right on red.
At every traffic light in the state.
Except for if there's a sign. But in some states, it is illegal to turn right on a red.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yes. So it depends on what state you're in.
So meaning they don't need the sign. It's just, you just assume.
Correct.
If you make a right on red,
correct,
you violate a traffic law.
There's far few in between in Houston, and I came up to a light where the you know, it was kind of, it was hard to see what was coming. So they had put up a no right on red, and I didn't see it. And the sad part is the cop was sitting right there in the business waiting for people to do it. Pulling them off.
I'll give you another one that when I heard this, I was like, wow. But because it's a lighter populated state, I guess it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of my when I lived in Minnesota, I was in northwest Minnesota. And if you traveled west, you were into North Dakota. And if you kept going west, you got into Montana. And one of the people I knew there that had been in Montana once told me that there are parts of Montana where there's no speed limit on the roads.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so, a little bit of a lead.
So that was another one. The different traffic things that are different. You know, it feels like we should all just want having a uniform set of this is good and this is safe and that's not safe. This is ticketable and that's not ticketable. I've often wondered about. Next one. And you asked me to. Actually, before we get to this, this is a quick one that I think both of us can relate on because it's happened to us recently. Within 2023, both myself and John Bellmer have had to serve at jury duty. And I don't understand how after you serve, you can be called again in, I believe it's a year, you can get called again, at least in Texas. We're based in Houston, and that's the rule there. But how this isn't uniform in terms of, okay, you serve, you're in a computerized system of registered jurors, and you go all the way back to the back of the line, and you just cycle back up. Like, it just feels very easy to do it that way.
Yeah, but in these giant cities like Houston, you'd never reach the top again. You would just
okay,
never serve
again.
Okay, well,
that's fine.
That's fine.
Everybody should have to serve.
I know, but so whoever's at the bottom of that list that's never done it would never make it to the top of that list, and then some people wouldn't serve, and some people would.
But the way
so
it is now, we have people that get lucky on the randomized.
That's true.
You know, so I realize what you're saying about the never making it to the top, but I think that exists as it is with the randomization of this thing. And then the problem with the randomization is you have people that get screwed and have to do it like four times in 5 years.
Yeah, it sucks.
So jury duty, boo. All right, next one. I've learned this when I was living in Minnesota, actually, because it's that different states have different rules on the educational hours that the public school students have to be in school. And the reason when I picked up on it there because the radio station I was working at broadcasted high school graduation. It was something that we went to the gym and we had a microphone for the speakers and you know, it was a way to sell something locally. And it was always the Memorial Day weekend was when they graduated. But they started right after Labor Day, which is when I started in Southern New Jersey growing up. But I didn't graduate. Graduations at South Jersey high schools aren't until the middle of June. It's about 3 weeks after Memorial Day. And so while there are some Jewish holidays that I had off that they didn't have off at the town in Minnesota that I was working in, it was never enough to account for a 3 week difference. So eventually I just landed on the fact the awakening occurred to me that you just don't have to be in school. Like, you don't have to do as many hours in Minnesota than you do in New Jersey. Let me ask you, Belmer, as a Texan your whole life, when did you guys start school and when did you end school each year?
I know we started school somewhere either at the beginning of August to the first couple weeks of August. I graduated in June 6th.
Okay, see, now that's more along the lines of when we did it in terms of your total time in school. We would Correct. Always start at Labor Day and graduate later in June. And you're saying you started before Labor Day in some portion of August, and you were done by the beginning of June.
Unless there was a hurricane. Then if we missed days, we had to make those days.
But that's
off.
Weird, right? Yeah. Like, the fact that, like, if you go to high school in one state, you get out 3 weeks earlier than if you go to high school in another state.
That's a little weird.
Yeah. So that one I don't get. I don't get why we do that. And here's another school one. This is more on the individual schools and the faculty, not the people that make the decisions in terms of local politicians or whatnot. But I never understood why chewing gum at school was turned, like, looked down upon like you were Satan. You know, I mean, it was like, how dare you chew gum? Because the immediate thing that the faculty thinks you're going to do is when the gum loses its taste, as opposed to get up. And in fairness, this is on the students, and I'm sure that there are some that do it. They don't get up and get a tissue and spit the gum out into the trash can. They put the gum on the desk or, you know, underneath the chair, and it's gross, but it happens. But the fact that you just assume that kids are going to do that.
Well, they're kids. Yeah, of course you assume they're going to do
but
that.
But guess what? If you watch them and you catch them with the gum, go up to them with a tissue and say, spit it out. Like, I don't know. Like, it just shouldn't be this thing that you can't do. Like, do you not get what I mean?
You know how,
like,
many millions of pieces of gum are on desks around this country from kids?
Look
the
at
poor
you.
Janitors.
Look at you siding with the teachers. The kids janitors. Get no benefit at all. Those poor janitors, please. The kids get no benefit at all. They're all bad. They're all going to spit their gum out on desks.
They're young and dumb,
stupid.
Man.
All right, Travis Kelce with a very relatable quote in an interview with Vanity Fair. We'll discuss on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All righty, we are back on a Thursday afternoon. And we roll on as I saw this. Unfortunately, we couldn't find the audio cut of it because I don't get these athletes doing interviews with non-sports publications like GQ and Vanity Fair and Rob Manfred doing Time Magazine. I know why it happens. I talked about this last week. It's because they know they're not going to get the hard-hitting questions and they can just kind of say whatever they want and not be challenged on it. But Vanity Fair? Anyway, Travis Kelce said, because he got asked about the fact that he is a little underpaid. And he said something that I would like more athletes to say. As when we look at the salaries for tight ends, he's the third highest. So obviously still making a pretty penny. But Darren Waller and George Kittle both making more than him. And he said, I have no problem being underpaid. I like winning. And actually, his exact quote was, I'm fine being underpaid. I love winning. And I think when you hear something like that, it normalizes the athletes on a much more relatable level. Because when you think about the salaries that most Americans make, obviously pales in comparison to the salaries of any NFL player. But we all love football. And so we want our teams to win, and we want to think that all of the players on our teams want to win. But when you are talking about the money that some of these guys make, there, and we talk about it all the time, there are guys that don't seem to want to win and don't seem to care as much, aren't as competitive. So I think hearing something like this from Travis Kelce when I heard it made me think, yeah, that's the kind of guy I want on my team. He's the best player at his position, perhaps of all time. I think that might be a bit of a stretch. I'll take Gronk. But regardless, right now I think he's probably the best tight end in football. And he's not the highest paid tight end in football. And he doesn't care about becoming the highest paid tight end in football because he just wants to win. Which I think should be the number one reason why you play. We don't have the drop here, but as Herm Edwards said, you play to win the game. And that should be the number one reason why sports teams exist, is to win. Doesn't mean they're all going to do it, but in a perfect world, we'd have everybody trying to win. Okay, that's why we, oftentimes people get mad at teams at the bottom of their leagues for not spending enough money, because it's an indication that ownership doesn't care enough. And they don't want to spend money to win another 5-10 games in whatever the sport may be if it means that they're still not a contender. And I think the fallacy in that argument, if that's the right word, that's just kind of the word that came out. Yeah, it actually is. The problem with that, though, is winning is cyclical. Meaning, you could have every team trying to win. And there's still 30-plus teams in all these leagues. Meaning, a few of them are going to suck. And they're not going to, like, their attempts to win are not going to be successful. And matter of fact, I actually think that's one of the worst places to be. Is when you have a team that is trying to win, that is so out of touch with the reality of winning, that they think their roster that is going to win 40% of its games or whatever is actually a contender to win a championship. But regardless, when you're on a contender like Travis Kelce, you want guys that just want to win, because that's going to open things up for everybody else in terms of your general manager and the things he can do with your roster in terms of your locker room. I would have to think that that's going to, you know, people are around a guy that wants to win that badly, that influence is going to rub off. And that's what we should want from our athletes. The fans are going to like you. I mean, both those guys, Travis and Jason, nobody says anything bad about them because they seem to be good locker room culture guys. They want to win and they'll take less money to do so. And if we had all athletes like that, at least the good ones, the upper echelon ones in their sports, we would be in a much better place. I don't think that the product that we have right now is bad by any means. I think that the NBA playoffs, even though the finals weren't that good, ended up being a pretty good watch. And you look at the competitive balance in a sport like the National Hockey League, where the Knights can win the Cup 6 years after coming into the league. That's pretty good. We're talking about the Chiefs right now with Travis Kelce saying what he said. Baseball, last year's World Series was an interesting dichotomy where you had the Astros, who were the dominant team all year, out of the American League, and they ran through the American League playoffs, and then you had the Phillies catch lightning in a bottle and get to the World Series out of the National League using the third wild card, which was recently installed as last year, the first year of that. So you had different ways that each team from both of the leagues in Major League Baseball get to the World Series. I think we're in a pretty healthy spot right now. But this is part of it, is because I think that you have guys like Kelce, and let's give Tom Brady credit, okay? He was always known to do this, to take less, to allow the Patriots to find ways to put better players around him. And it was a key reason that they were so successful. Think about the early days of Brady's tenure with New England. The fact that they were able to get so many good defenders, Teddy Bruschi, Rodney Harrison, Ty Law, you know, Asante Samuel, and they keep those guys together. Richard Seymour, Hall of Famer. And then later on, they were more of an offensive identity. I mentioned Gronk. Julian Edelman was there for a while. Always seemed to have pretty solid offensive lines. So this is all a key to winning. It's all part of building a team, is that selflessness, not just from an attitude standpoint, but from a financial standpoint. And it sounds simple, right? I'm fine with being underpaid. I love winning. Like, that's a simple quote. But it's not mainstream across the top-end talents in each league. And some guys, and I think the reason for that is because the ones that do just chase the bread, there's a lot of people that have no problem with that. And so it really just depends on your view of why you play sports. Do you play to win, or is it a career and you want to maximize your earnings? Because if you look at it that way, a lot of us in a lot of different fields, if we had an opportunity to do the same job but just for a different company and make more money, people would go to the other job that would provide them with more money. And so I don't know that you're necessarily selfish for being motivated by money, but I do think that there's a complimentary attitude that you deserve to be praised with if you're one of those guys like Travis Kelce that just says, I'm good with this. You know, and being able to take less. And it's funny we bring up Kelce, because what happened on his same team not like a little over a year ago? Tyreek Hill's like, I want to be the highest paid receiver in the NFL. The Chiefs couldn't make that happen because they had just paid Mahomes. So they have to trade Tyreek Hill. But what happened? They won the Super Bowl regardless this past year. So I don't think anybody did. I mean, like, when you're universally liked, then you're doing a lot of things right. And I think both those Kelce brothers are like that. They're popular off the field with their podcast, and the mom took off at the Super Bowl. Everybody loved Donna. And they're popular guys on their teams. I mean, I can tell you, I think Jason Kelce is going to retire an Eagle. Just not going out on a limb there. Travis probably won't ever play for a team other than the Chiefs, because if he's content making money, or making what he's making, he's fine being underpaid. And he loves winning. He's going to do a lot more winning on the Chiefs. So I think this is just a very relatable thing for us who are competitors. Those that, like, when I go home and we play our holiday Scrabble games, I always want to beat my dad. You know, and people that, I'm not a video gamer anymore, but you always want to beat your friends in video games. So, and this is that equivalent of that. You just want to win. Yes, it's a big business, and there's a lot of money for you to be had as a result of being a part of that winning. But at the end, winning's winning. And if you're motivated by that, then you're kind of like all of us. So good for you, Travis Kelce. We will take a timeout and we'll come back. We're going to end where we started today with the Domingo Germán perfect game. What's better when it comes to a regular season individual achievement? We'll discuss. First Name Sports on a Thursday. Wrapping things up, June the 29th. First Name Sports, SportsNet Radio.
This is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Okay, well, let's end the show where we started it. As we talked about the perfect game from Domingo Germán for the New York Yankees. Does it even count, by the way, if it's against the A's? Like, you know, like, should we even count that?
Yes, it counts. Okay. As much as it should.
Anyway, I had this thought, because we've had now 24 perfect games. And we've had some random guys throw on him. You know, for all we know, maybe in 10 years we're looking back on Domingo Germán, and that's the moment of his career. It's very possible. I saw a tweet from Legion Hoops. Explain Domingo Herman's perfect game in NBA terms. And the first reply is somebody saying, Tony Snell, who's like an NBA scrub, scoring 81 points against the worst team in the NBA.
I think he maybe a little better than a scrub, but to score 81 points is ridiculous for him. Yeah.
And so the thinking there is, it feels like the single most amazing random occurrence that happens frequently enough, because we don't see these other all-time things happen by just random players, right? And I think that this is the coolest individual single-game regular season achievement in sports. You got every single hitter out. There was no errors. There were no walks. There were no hit batters. There were no drop third strikes. Ball gets away. Runner gets the first. Nothing. It was a perfect game. And so, how does this equate to the NBA? Or in the NFL? Like, I don't know. Maybe it's, we talked about this, I think, off the air. Brett Favre on Monday Night Football, after his dad died in Oakland, goes and throws, I think, 5 touchdown passes. It was a Monday Night Football record against the Raiders. You know, and Herman's uncle had recently passed away. So if we're thinking, it's so hard to find, but Brett Favre's one of the all-time quarterbacks. Herman is just like, he's just kind of a guy. And he threw a perfect game. Like, that's crazy. And again, when there have been 24 of them, you look at some of the guys that have never, Pedro Martinez never threw a perfect game. I talked about that earlier. Domingo Herman is the first Dominican-born pitcher to throw a perfect game. Like, what is better than this in terms of an individual regular season achievement in sports? I can't think of one. I mean, I don't know, maybe a quarterback completing every pass in a football game?
That's pretty close.
Yeah, that's pretty close. But when has that ever happened? Not only has this happened, but it's happened 24 times. You know? And that's why I think it's bizarre that it feels like it should be just as hard as a quarterback completing every pass or a basketball player making every shot. But it happens way more frequently than those things. I don't know. I can't, because there's 27 guys you have to get out. Not, or 27 outs, 9 guys, 3 times each guy. And we'd be surprised if a basketball player went 15 for 15 or 14 for 14. That's half of the 27, a little bit more than that.
How about Fernando Tatis Jr.'s father in 1999?
Yeah, I know where you're going with
2 grand slams in one inning for the first time. Yeah.
Now,
but they're far and few in between, examples.
Now, that's few and far between. But again, Fernando Tatis Jr.'s father, Fernando Tatis, is the lesser of the two Tatises. And I bet you Fernando Tatis Jr. never does that
never.
In his career.
Yeah.
So there's a randomness element to this. But there's also, when you just think of the accomplishment, a level of amazement here that when you put the two together, it doesn't really make sense that it happens 24 times. And I really think, just because of how hard it is, if I could do one of these things, I would want to, because it's like that promo we had on this show.
Yeah.
I said that if there was one record in sports that I would want to have, I would want to take down Nolan Ryan's 7 no-hitters and have 8 of them. Because you're facing the lineup 3 times at least, and they're never getting a hit. That seems hard enough to do once, let alone 8 times, which is, and that nobody's ever breaking that record by Nolan Ryan. I'd have to look too, because it's multiple games. All the guys that got close to DiMaggio were good players. Like, I remember Albert Pujols had one up close to 40. Chase Utley got close to 40. Like, it's notable guys. It's never like, oh, this. I mean, maybe Luis Arraez is kind of a random name who might hit 400, but is he going to be a random name in 5-10 years? Like, maybe more people are going to start to know, hey, this guy Luis Arraez is a pretty good player. You know? So it's that combination for me. I can't think of anything that compares to this. with how random the athletes are that have done it, but with how frequently it's also happened. I don't care that it was against the A's either. I joke about that at the beginning of the segment, but it is one of those things where you're a perfect game. You're etched in the history books for baseball forever. Nobody will remember that the team was garbage that you did it against.
Yeah, I think you're right because of the randomness of it. Like, most of the time, amazing feats we see in sports are done by the best
athletes.
Done by
amazing players.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
And this is just kind of weird that it's, anybody can do it.
And now, in the case of Hermann, he gets shelled and gives up 10 runs in his last start.
Wasn't there a pitcher that did it on, LSD?
Yeah,
too?
Doc Ellis, I think it was. I think it was a no-hitter.
Okay.
Now, here's the flip side of the randomness, because I was looking at some of the I told you I go to the Baseball Hall of Fame every year for the induction, and that's coming up at the end of July. And one of the things that we do is we do trivia, and then we give a prize to our quiz winners. And I got 7 questions, perfect game related questions, onto my quiz from last night's game. And one of the crazier ones was there have been 24 perfect games, obviously, as I said, in the history of baseball. And from 2009 to 2012, so that's 4 seasons, the same team was perfect games, meaning they were on the losing end 3 times. And it was actually a good team. It was the Rays. Okay? They were in the World Series in 2008. They've been in the playoffs 10 times since 2008, with that World Series appearance being the first of their long when they had Madden. And they've been mostly pretty good, transitioning to Kevin Cash, and obviously they got to the World Series in the COVID year. 3 times they got perfect games in that stretch. Where they had Evan Longoria, Carl Crawford, all those guys. It doesn't make any sense to get happen that 3 times. It just is weird. And like I said, I can't think of anything else like it. So, for as much as Domingo Germán, with different things that have happened in his career, rightfully so, gets criticized, he'll have that forever. We can't undo the perfect game. And that's why I do think, I wonder if a game like last night, I'm sure we talked about it off the air. Armando Galarraga probably thinks about it all the time. Because that was, he doesn't have any other thing to really cling his baseball career to. He will always be the guy that lost the perfect game on the 27th out. But I wonder if a guy like Jim Joyce, who the umpire who blew the call, who probably in due time moves on. I wonder if when there's a perfect game, it has to bring back bad memories. And he has to wish that there was replay, because, again, now that umpire is forever memorialized amongst baseball fans as the guy that screwed it up. As I see now, they're playing a matinee getaway game out in Oakland, and the A's are up 1-0. They got 3 hits in the bottom of the first inning. They were 1 inning late. So, it is I really think I'm going to go to my grave with this take. A perfect game is the coolest individual single game regular season achievement in sports. And it's crazy that there have been 24 of them. But it is what it is. I don't know, maybe a natural hat trick in hockey where you get 3 goals consecutively in the game. So if the score's 1-1 and you individually make it 4-1, you don't see that often. That's pretty cool. I'm just trying to think of things that can kind of relate to it. And I don't really have any. I mean, hitting for the cycle doesn't happen that often, but I think that a perfect game, I think, is more impressive than hitting for the cycle. So congratulations to Domingo Germán, and Yankees fans have something else to brag about now because they have the most perfect games ever. At 4, on top of if you're 27, 27, 27, 27. By the way, it's been 27 for, 14 years now. They haven't won since 2009. And a lot of people that are 27, 27, 27, they weren't alive in the 60s and the 50s. Back tomorrow to wrap up the week of shows here on Sports Map Radio. We'll have our 10th inning and our Friday 5 and all sorts of other Friday fun here on First Name Sports. Sports Kings is up next. Mean Gene has you for the next 2 hours. My name is Greg Frank, bidding you all a friendly farewell. Signing off. This has been First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.